I'm Jordan West. I've been started working on Cassandra about 5 years ago. Took a break for about a year and a half, and then I've been working on it again for about a year and a half now. Been around distributed databases for about 7 years. Worked on a database called React before, also Dynamo inspired. And I've got kind of a passion for building databases, and then also a passion for, I guess, breaking them or making sure that they're not broken when they reach production. I have more fun breaking them myself than seeing a customer harmed by it. So I was really excited when I got back into the project about a year and a half ago. And around the same time, I think I joined in February, and in June, the community voted to freeze all of the feature work on Cassandra 4.0 and really focus on making Cassandra 4.0.0 a release that the large operators could be comfortable putting into production. And that's a little bit different from the history of the project previously, if you're familiar with running Cassandra in production. But, you know, we also didn't, like, put out a completely horrible database. Like, there are thousands of unit tests in there. There are thousands more integration tests in a library we have called dtest, which is a Python library we use to write tests that are more making assertions about a cluster. So we had to do something different. Like, if we're going to vote to give ourselves this time, what are we going to do with it past what we've done already? And so what we did is we adopted different methodologies than what we'd been doing before. We looked a lot more to production and using the vast amount of Cassandra deployments that we all have here to inform and make our testing better. And then we also spent a lot of time building tools to make writing much more complex tests that covered a lot more of the state space of what Cassandra can see in production easier. And so that's led to basically sort of like four areas or four pillars of how we did better. And that's just having more focus and commitment to testing, adopting new methodologies, building new tooling, and then really relying on the entire community. This has been really a community effort, and I'll talk more about that at the end. And it's worked. This is a graph of critical issues fixed, and these are just issues that have been fixed in 3.0.x, 3.x, and 4.0. So that bug affected all versions. So there's 30 here. That doesn't include the 40 that were found in the new internode messaging code and the 40 more that were found in the fixes that were done afterwards. So we found hundreds of bugs, and it's been extremely effective. And not only have 4.0 benefited, but if you're looking to put any of the 3.0 or 3.x line into production, a lot of this work has benefited really all of those versions as well. And these are really serious issues. These aren't minor things. These are things like missing rows in a response, corruption in the SS tables, corruptions in a response. And so these are a lot of times problems that a more regular user may not have the tools to detect. And so they may be silently, giving wrong answers to their customers. And so we focused a lot on really these high-value critical issues. And so, again, while this talk is really about the stability of 4.0, kind of a side theme here is that the upcoming Cassandra 3.0.19 release is really a grade-A production-ready version of 3.0. And again, that's because much of the testing that has been done in the 4.0 timeframe has also benefited those. So diving into a little bit about how we changed our focus and our commitment to testing. First was when we made that vote about freezing is we did something really different. We stopped branching right when we did the feature freeze. So feature freezes aren't entirely new to the Cassandra release development cycle. What is new is that we would usually like create Cassandra-4.0 at that time, and many of the key engineers would go to work on trunk. And so this time, by not doing that, there was a lot more focus on making the current trunk, the future Cassandra 4.0, stable. And we still haven't created that branch, despite Alpha 1 being released this week. And also, if you weren't aware, Alpha 1 has been released, and you can go start to kick the tires on it. But I think that's been announced a lot, probably. And actually, what was kind of exciting to me is we had a conversation earlier in the hallway, and some people who really were against the no branching thing are actually advocates for holding on to branching even longer than I am, and I consider myself a pretty stringent proponent of, waiting as long as possible. I wanted to wait till beta, and it looks like we're going to actually wait until RC to create that branch. And so that doesn't mean that we don't merge anything. If you go look at the commit history, a lot has been done. We've done a significant amount of changes, tens of thousands of lines. But what we put in there, there are a lot more narrow guidelines, and we use the mailing list to discuss things that are potentially destabilizing or that are really large. And so we've been doing that basically from day one. The first day of the freeze, Sam and I had a patch I had reviewed for him that we wanted to get in. And so we've had to deal with, you know, how do we deal with the rigidity of a rule like this versus the practicality of getting things in, because it's impractical to have a feature reviewed, sitting, waiting to commit for, you know, how it's been a year since September 1st that we agreed on this freeze. So we committed internal networking changes that were tens of thousands of lines, but our bar for getting them in has continually been higher than during the feature development cycle. So along with that and all this time, we had to figure out what to focus on. Cassandra's huge. We can't focus on everything, and we had to focus on some things first. So ways that the community did that, we're looking at areas where there's lots of change. Subsystems that have a lot of reported bugs, so looking at production, talking to production users, looking at the mailing lists for where we were seeing issues. And then sort of an obvious one is, you know, we've made certain promises to the user around either operational promises or consistency promises, and it's easy to want to write tools that verify those. And then there's a lot of community expertise in this room and on the mailing list, and we can rely on areas where, you know, they think we could have focused because they know the history of the project and spend time. And then in the Cassandra community, we don't ever forget performance. Sometimes we forget scale, but I think we're getting better about that, especially this time around with the performance testing that the Netflix folks did. But so, you know, it's never been lost sight that while a lot of what I'm going to be talking about is correctness, performance hasn't been lost in this year of work also. Some of the areas we chose, which I've talked about already, internal networking, the storage subsystem, so some of the large rewrites there. In particular, query correctness, some less used features like reverse iteration, where there were some issues, compaction and on-disk correctness, consistency, cluster membership, and then another big area was upgrades. There's an area we're still focusing on considerably. And then we also need to figure out when we stop working on an area, because we can, you know, never release the database, so to speak, and that wouldn't be good for the community either. So there's a couple different ways we do that. One is looking at trends over time. We can use different methodologies. We can just give ourselves like a reasonable, you know, time, or we can sort of like look to the community and how they feel. Again, some examples of that, like when we focused on reverse iteration, we subjected it to three different methodologies. I'll talk a bit more about these, but it went through a targeted property-based test or fuzz test, some more unit tests, replay tests, and a bunch of other things that made us feel comfortable that we had kind of worked out bugs in that area. For other areas, we monitored reports over time. We built new tools or fixed existing tools that were covering those areas. And in cases like internal networking, it was a huge undertaking by, I believe, 3 to 6 engineers over a considerable amount of months with a considerable amount of code review, testing, performance testing. It was really cool to see the community come together and build that. And then we have to split up all this work because there's a lot of it. So some ways that we have or can be doing that are by subsystem. But also, like within a subsystem, it may be that the person who's really good at running replay tests can run replay tests for multiple subsystems, and we can split it up that way. Also, just by building more efficient tools, so someone has to build those tools and focus on those tools. And then, while I'm not necessarily advocating that this is always good, and I think we should sprinkle more correctness into our performance and scale testing and more performance and scale into our correctness testing, we have kind of divided that line by having some portion of the community focus on correctness and other portions of the community focus on performance simply because tooling and et cetera was convenient. But hopefully we'll see a little bit more of that merge, and I think there's plans in the future. So just that focus and commitment has had a lot of benefits before any of the other work. I think having discussions here with people and on the mailing list that this focus on quality stability is now really much more ingrained in our release cycle. We've spent a lot of time thinking about, you know, what alpha, beta, and RC mean. I think, you know, in general, as a community, it's become more important. And then it's also just that we've made it easier to run and write tests. And part of it is like testing isn't always fun, and a lot of it is because it's a pain to express things that you want to express. And then, you know, we've also given community experts time to focus on areas that maybe they knew needed to focus, but because of other external pressures, didn't have time to focus on it. And so by making that decision as a community, we were able to give those people that time. And then that also gave new contributors time to work with those existing contributors and learn a subsystem better or bring new methodologies. And I think we've seen a lot of strong new contributors during this last year through that. So focus and commitment are great, but we had to adopt some new methodologies as well. And probably the biggest mental shift that I think we've made is not to say that unit integration tests are bad or not worth it. We should absolutely never throw them out. But that sometimes when a system as complex as Cassandra with such a large state space of potential, what we store, et cetera, that sometimes an engineer taking a model in their head, jotting out, you know, a handful of unit tests is simply not going to cover that space sufficiently. And so what we need are tools that allow, you know, that model to be expressed in an efficient manner by an engineer, and then let the machine generate those tests and sort of work through that state space for us in a better way. Let us focus more on writing more tests that have higher value. So some examples of that would be, you know, instead of flipping one byte to check if corruption works, but making a statement that corruption is a detection is a property of a correct checksum implementation, or that, you know, when I'm upgrading a database or after I upgrade, the queries are the same, or that data on disk matches, or if I'm removing data from a table that's indexed, it's indexed as well. So we're not just making a single statement of, like, if I insert A and then I delete A, it's on disk. We're more making a general statement that if I insert something and delete something, then it should be removed from disk, and we can do that in a more random pattern, relying on the machine to sort of help us generate those tests. And sort of the first example of that that was in the library was in Cassandra 13.304, these properties will tend to be written in some sort of, like, for all, you know, checksum, what this says up here, I don't need to read it, but we want to basically be able to prove that that's true. And we may not be able to prove that that's 100% true, like we're not going to put it through a theorem prover, but by running the tests so many times and generating enough random permutations, we can continue to increase our confidence over time that these issues are not there. So to make these properties better, though, it's really hard to generate randomness that is meaningful. And so one thing we can do is look to, again, that vast Cassandra deployment footprint to improve what we input into our tests. And we can do this, if it's important for certain people, while still maintaining privacy, et cetera, without sort of exposing our customers to sort of negative impacts there. But we can, again, leverage either the shape of data or hash data or something to basically better simulate real-world use cases, because those use cases, while maybe not uniformly random, are random to us. They are not something that we would necessarily think to put in. On a completely different tack from sort of testing and tooling, we also just adopted just more code review. We spent time giving engineers time to go read code, because it turns out that, you know, fresh eyes, whether it's the original eyes coming back a few months later or new eyes or them working together, finds bugs, helps, you know, often the system grows organically, especially a large rewrite of a system, kind of helps you step back, maybe better organize and refactor that system, make it easier to test going forward. And from that, more testing can come. A good example of that is when we audited the test suites. So a while back, which was great and is a very good thing, the community agreed that we should try to not release without the test suite being green. But it turns out that when that's the goal, what engineers tend to do is not necessarily fix the test, but ignore the test, or maybe the test is flaky, so you introduce a sleep for 30 seconds, and you keep doing that, and now your CI suite takes 23 hours to run without massive parallelization. Or maybe tests you thought were running aren't running, or you added Java 11 and you didn't have any tests running Java 11. So all of these things sort of need to be, they're broken windows that need to be fixed, and we spent a lot of time fixing that. Specifically things, there were two or three suites in Tree that weren't running, and the upgrade tests in the integration suite weren't running. We also needed to make CI easier to run. So once we have all that complexity and extra suites, et cetera, there's the Circle CI pipeline, and that needed to be a little bit less painful for people because, again, when you lower the barrier to any of these things, it turns out people do it much more. And also, certain people have different Circle CI parameters, just depending on, like, if you have paid for an upgraded account, et cetera, because you want your D-test to run faster. And so we made that easier for people as well. And so, again, all of this has had benefits. I think it's shifted the way that we approach testing in a lot of ways. I think we've seen, like, a really encouraging increase in the number of people who have just adopted property-based tests. The other day I was reviewing a patch of Chris's, actually, and was pleasantly surprised to have seen him just drop in a test with quick theories in it. And, you know, seeing things like that is really cool. Again, making all the tests pass has had a huge effect. That upgrade bar in that graph earlier was all just because we turned on upgrade tests. In one case, a user-reported bug that had gone ignored was actually caught by those tests. And when we turned them on, that bug got fixed. And then again, like, using production really helps us inform where we focus and it makes our tests better. So, ideas are great. You have to be able to execute them. That's where the tools come in. And one of the first tools and one of the most effective tools that we've built is called, we call it replay testing. And I hear word that it's going to be open source soon, or it's on its way to be open source soon. But it's a model-based test, property-based test, whatever you want to call it. The idea is that we take some random data set and traffic from a production cluster. And again, this doesn't mean uniformly random. It's just it's random to us based on the application's distribution of data. And we want to just have the property that these two clusters, if we were to, you know, do an upgrade on one and leave the other one the same, they would answer the same. Or if we had a feature flag like changing the width of the column index on one, that the answers were the same. Anything where the user shouldn't expect to see their answers change just because the database is doing something. And so what that looks like in practice is we have a production cluster with some queries that we capture through FQL and then a snapshot of the data through NodeTool Snapshot. Those queries get processed into a format that is much more easy to parallelize over and then is also convenient because you can perform some queries on it, perhaps to get some ideas about the shape of your what the custom, you know, the user is doing. And then we create two clusters with that snapshot. And again, one cluster is going to be sort of like the source where nothing's going to happen to it, and then the other cluster is going to have some variation applied to it, like an upgrade or a setting change or a fault or something like that. And then this job basically takes that pre-processed query file and for each query plays it against both clusters, gets responses, and all it's doing is asking, you know, are those responses the same in the face of an upgrade or an expansion? So separately or after that, the sort of like second and also very effective part of replay testing has been this concept of diff testing, which is so the queries may be the same logically, but the query may not cover the entire like data set space. So we also just want to check that like exhaustively, is the data logically on disk the same between the two clusters? This part is open source now. It was released, I believe, a week or two ago under Cassandra Diff. And if you're interested in running it on your machines or learning more, come find me, and I'll direct you to the people who actually wrote it. But we're trying to just assert this property of like logical equality after, you know, some arbitrary set of operations. And then the last sort of, this is more on the scale and performance testing, but cluster-wide sort of thing, tool that was contributed, and Anthony and John gave a talk about it already, so I won't go in too much detail, but the TLP stress tool I think is really cool because they've based a lot of their workloads on their experience working with production Cassandra customers, and they've, it seems like, really battle-tested TLP stress and really put it through its paces. And so having that out in the community and having, you know, the ability to run some of the workloads that they've seen given their exposure, I think is great. And then also, you know, the ability to stand up these clusters really easily. Because, again, anything that makes the barrier harder causes people to, you know, like, the reasons start coming out, like, oh, it's going to take too long, et cetera, but if it takes a minute to get a cluster and start running one of these tests, then it's just on the order of how long do I want to run the test, and that's really awesome. Moving a little more locally, although still cluster-oriented, the way that we wrote integration tests was really painful and a little bit ineffective in the sense that we would write it in Python, and so introducing a certain class of faults and pains was really difficult. In the middle of the freeze, we got a new tool we called the NJVM D-test or integration tests. But it allows you to write those tests that you previously used to write in Python in Java by spinning up multiple Cassandra nodes in a single JVM, which, if you're familiar with the Cassandra code base, was a pain, was a big hurdle, because there's a lot of singletons and things that make running multiple nodes in one memory space very, very difficult. So a lot of class loader tricks later, that's fixed, and you're able to write much more effective integration tests with the NJVM D tests than you were with the Python D tests. And so a lot of our focus between now and beta will be identifying D tests that are of high enough value to convert to this and improve along the way. Some other benefits are that the tests run way, way faster because you're not setting up a Cassandra cluster with CCM. You're doing everything in memory right there. It also makes it a lot easier to inject those faults. Lots of work being done here, too, to make the library better as people start building more tests and we look at, you know, where holes are or where we have areas where we can improve and make the tool better. And then I've mentioned a lot about property-based testing. I think a large chunk of, like, replay and diff falls under that. But we also included in Tree a library called Quick Theories, which, if you're looking to write smaller, medium sort of property-based tests, is effective. But what we found is in Cassandra, like, the state space we want to search is pretty big, or property-based testing is new to people. And so people have tended to roll their own. One example that tested the reverse iteration really effectively was simply writing data to the mem table and writing data to the SS table and comparing that answers coming from both were the same. There's also more work on a project that is, like, codenamed, and I don't mean that in, like, a private way, like Cluster Fuzz, but I think it's going to change because there's already a public project called Cluster Fuzz from Google. But the idea is basically to take this modeling up to the cluster level and model things like the consistency and the monotonic consistency properties of Cassandra, et cetera, and to do this at scale. And that's really interesting because it's we did this before when I worked on the previous database, and it's a very hard challenge to do this well over a large, like, state space like Cassandra, especially with CQL, et cetera. Like, we did it over just pure key value, and that was hard enough. So the work being done here to make answering the question, is the query response I just got valid given all the possible states that I could be in right now, is really cool. Along with that will come a lot of ways to generate data for tests in Cassandra. So to be able to say, you know, generate me a set of random writes and deletes and then a random set of reads so that I can make assertions about those things. And really the benefits of this have been simple. We've tested a lot more, whether that's been we write more tests, we've made it easier to write more tests, those tests cover a larger state space. The end result is that we test more. And that's led to a more stable 4.0, 3x, and 3.0. And then lastly, this wouldn't have been possible without the community. We voted on to take this new approach together. We've held ourselves to that largely, and that's been a community effort. It's been voices from all over the community just asking, you know, are we making the correct choice about stability versus a separate, or versus a change? We also defined a whole new JIRA lifecycle during this process. And a lot of these tools have come from some of Cassandra's biggest operators, which is really cool. Sorry, that slide should have been taken out because that says pretty much the same thing. And then, again, just to reiterate, like, the benefits of all of this effort, we now have what I think Cassandra 4.0.0 will be a release that operators really can be comfortable putting into production. They won't have to wait till a .x later. And it's a foundation to build upon. So, like, this isn't the end game. Like, what we get from this is hopefully the ability to release much quicker at this quality in the future. Because I don't think anyone wants to wait as long as we've waited for 4.0 again. And then again, a side benefit has been, I think, that 3.0.19, when it's released, will be, you know, really ready for production. And the focus is now sort of shifting to what has changed between 3.0.x and or 3.x through 4.0. And so we'll see, you know, a lot of stability improvements in the 3.x series as well, or I guess 3.11 series. And again, it's hard to deny that it's been beneficial. This is just a small portion of the critical bugs that's been fixed over the course of this year. And I think it's been really awesome to see. Thank you. And I'll take any questions, but we'll get Joey going as soon as possible. Ben? Oh. So the question was, with the NJVM D-tests, how are we able to run multiple Cassandra nodes given all of the static and singleton stuff in Cassandra? And the short answer is lots of class path tricks. Yeah, so there's basically like a class loader per node, and then there's a way to submit work on that class loader. Benedict and Alex Petrov can give you like the and John Meredith can give you the nitty-gritty details. Any other questions? Awesome. Thank you. We're excited. I think it's it was really cool to see people encouraged by how stable 4.0 is going to be. So thank you, everybody.